I did a Google search for, I couldn't find unlikable artists or artists who were difficult. So I just did a Google search for artists who were dicks, and that brought up loads. Hi, and welcome to episode 97 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And today we've got a juicy topic which was introduced by two different listener questions. We're going to talk about how important it is to like an artist in order to like their work, but also what that means for us in terms of projecting a persona or how we present ourselves to the world. So we think this will be a good one. But first of all, what have you been up to this week, Alice?
I've been busy lady this week.
I know I've seen you whizzing around.
I have. I've been whizzing around. What's interesting is, so basically I have all of a sudden a bit of a gallery deadline. And what's interesting about that is how it has made me recognise how we work best. I was perfectly happy. La, la, la. I have no rush. I have no pressure. I can develop this work slowly in my own time. There was not a thing. I wasn't trying to get work ready for Christmas or anything like that. But it's also been quite fun having a deadline that is imposed by somebody else in this case. Usually when I have a deadline, it's self-imposed. But in this case, A, the fact that somebody else is interested is quite nice. I'm sorry, but it is. But it's really kind of made me focus in, like, what do these paintings need to get them over the finish line? So the lady came and she said, can I take that one? And and I said, no, you can't. I said, it's close, but I'm not ready to let it go. Not happy. And I need to work on them. And in my head, I have to have them all working together. So I've been doing that like a slightly crazy thing.
You have to back up a little bit and you have to tell us which lady and what gallery and what's going on.
Well, it's a London gallery and she has her own clientele. So I'm not going to be publicising it, which also feels really weird because usually that's what I've spent the last 5 or 6 years doing. But she can't be open, so she's going to rotate and have them in the window. And I quite like the fact that it just feels like a little bit of an experiment. So we will see how we go. But the other thing that I thought was interesting was that as I was thinking, like, you know, what are this group about? And we talk about this a lot and people dig for this a lot. I think it's something that we all grapple with. You know, what is it about? How important is it? What's prompted this? What's my inspiration? And I don't really start with an idea, but, you know, the paintings have developed over a period of time where we've all been in a different situation. I wanted there to be a gentleness, but you know, also we were closed down, and yet over the summer I really enjoyed these open spaces, and it was just a fun, there was a kind of feeling that I couldn't maybe quite get to grips with. And then I decided that I was going to call one of them Wild Swimming because it just seemed to be really, you know, appropriate to the painting and what happened over the summer. And, you know, there was something quite magical about some of the places that we swam in over the summer. So that is now going to be the thread that goes through all of them. And they each are different relationships to that sense of finding a space where you can kind of let go. So I'm in the middle of just finalizing titles, which is also something that we've spoken about recently. So
there are, I was going to ask you how much of a deadline you've got, how long you've got, but it sounds like you're almost ready.
Yeah, she wants them on Saturday.
Oh, that's a deadline. Because this only happened at what, a couple of weeks ago?
Friday. But this is what I say about how, you know, they could have gone on. I could have gone on along, poodling along with these forever. Like, when do we say where a painting is stopped?
This is very true, yeah.
But it's very interesting, you know, when she asks, can I have this one? No. You know when the answer is yes and when the answer is no. And I say that all I can promise is that I will work on them during the week. And if I get to the stage where I'm happy with them, then I'll bring them. If not, then you can't have them.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going with. So, yeah, I've got a couple of frames arriving today. got to do all the other bits and bobbins.
This is exciting. So new people will be discovering you, I presume, if she's got her own clientele. Many of these will be people who maybe have never, you know, don't know you.
Yeah, she's convinced they're not the kind of people who ever bother Googling and looking people up. So we'll see. I don't know.
It sounds like they're both rich and old, I'm guessing.
Who knows? I'm never going to get to meet. And this is the thing that's quite interesting for me, because as I say, I've built everything on, you know, people who I know and have met often in person. So it's just a very different way of doing things. So that has been my week, but it is good fun. It has been really good fun and I have enjoyed it. So going back to the how we work best, you know, I like having deadlines. I do. It works for me.
Yeah.
So that's been my week. What about you?
Well, pretty much pootling along thinking, oh, I'll just keep going on these. I was just thinking when you were talking, because I have no deadline. Now I have set myself something for, I think. Part of what's confusing my deadline is the publishing side of things.
Yeah.
Thinking about, okay, what's entailed in actually getting this published. And so I have been working on paintings and I have finished a couple this week, but also started some more. So this could be the never-ending series if I don't have some kind of point where I have to stop. But what I've begun to do, because I've realised the publishing part is wrapped up in it, is look into publishing options and start to get that side of things nailed down well in advance. And so I actually have a meeting tomorrow with a publisher, and there are, I found a couple of these publishers who publish books and pay you a royalty, but who quietly have another service, which is called contract publishing, used to be called self-publishing, but where they will do any amount of things for you, depending on what you want. So they might do the whole project management, editorial design, production, and even shipping, or you can take pick bits and pieces of what you want. So I just want to, I'm having my first conversation tomorrow to get more of a sense of deadlines, timelines, like what's involved. And the other complication for me is I have to decide, do I want to seek permissions to include writing or poetry? And if I do, that adds in at least 10 to 12 weeks, apparently, waiting for permissions and licensing fees and all of that.
I think given your topic, you can't avoid that, can you, really?
Well, I've got two ways of doing it. So one way is to say, most of the book isn't about the poems, first of all. So most of the book is about my process and the project and the development. So that's fine. But when I get to the point where I'm showing the paintings, one way to do it is to describe the poem and to say at the beginning of the book, as you get to the poems, Google the poem or go buy this copy if you're really interested in seeing the poems. And I could... And that couldn't hurt anybody because I'm just recommending the poems. So I've got that path to go on, or I've got the path where I actually print the poems, and that gets more complicated and more expensive. Right. So I've got to decide on that. So, but basically just investigating that while working on the paintings. And I actually have this, I did some kind of crazy wild painting on a few relatively small boards the other night, and I loved what happened. And there's not much depth in terms of layers. And I was just thinking about, you know, say I had a show and I had to just decide, right, which are going in. One of those I would give them. But because I don't have a deadline and because I think, yeah, but I could have more layers and more history. But does it need more layers and more history if I love it? I'm starting to think it doesn't. And I'm starting to think I'm just going to take it down and call it done after an hour of painting.
Yep. But I think partly that's what happens as you get more experienced, is that you do things intuitively, more knowledgeably, and you get things in the right place, and there's an expressiveness, and, you know, the painting carries something more immediately. I mean, it's a different way of working. You have different effects. And I bet if you compared it to another painting that was built with multiple layers, there are going to be differences. There are going to be things that a painting that is built with loads and loads of layers has. I feel that when I look at some of mine, particularly if you feel like you go full circle back to a degree of simplicity, you think, well, why do I have to do all that great big loop? Can we not just start with that and that be enough? But, and sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is.
And also what happens that I find is sometimes I feel it is enough and I leave it and I think it's strong enough to stand on its own. And then maybe I look at it and I compare it with another one and I feel, but it doesn't quite have the same depth as if I did that journey where I pushed it and went away and then brought it back again. That, and that's how I sort of feel about it.
Well,
but I agree with you on the immediacy.
That's 90% of my paintings take ages. But then I think, you know, some of the ones that have been most successful, both from my perspective and either being recognized or being sold, are the ones that were immediate. And I don't want to be indoctrinated by myself into believing that I have to keep going when I don't, you know, so it's difficult. And everyone listening must know this feeling of, do I leave that one now? Or, but like you say, what I've decided is I'm leaving it for now. And then I'll see. And if it really is good enough, it'll still stand up when I look at it.
Exactly. In a month. It'll stand on its own. Jolly good.
So that's our week. So when we planned this topic, it was because of two questions. So I'll read the questions first and then we can get into it. The questions came from Pam, who asked how much she has to reveal about herself in order to sell her art. So she was concerned about revealing her own personality and does she have to put on a persona? Kathy asked, to what extent does the story or persona of the artist matter while appreciating the art? And she said, for example, does the fact that Gauguin was not a nice fellow make you like his art less? And we thought that we could roll these two together into an interesting discussion. And I thought we could begin with the artists we admire and then bring it back to ourselves. And when we were preparing our notes for this, we have a Google Doc where we can both see what we're doing and we're preparing the notes. And I had put in my notes and I put out the people I wanted to discuss. And I put Ted Hughes, and Alice wrote, what did you write here?
I said, please
can we have a week where we don't mention
Ted Hughes?
And I said, no, that's the whole point of today. And it's what I'm focused on. And so just let me explain. So, yes, if anybody's sick of hearing about Ted Hughes, I apologize, but it is my primary focus. This work, you know, it's what I think about all the time, trying to get this into my paintings. But the reason I thought he was a good lead into this discussion is because I had actually had to grapple with this myself and think through, what does it mean when the artist is not necessarily someone you would be on the same wavelength with if you knew them? And now, the famous stuff about Ted Hughes is that he was a philanderer and that he had many, many, many women. And in a way, that's never bothered me, because I think people who do that have issues and needs, emotional needs or whatever, that I'm not going to judge. But funnily enough, so some people listening might be going, no, but you know, that's just me. That does that. I wouldn't marry someone who did that, but I don't judge strangers who do that. But what I found interesting was when I started to read his letters, there were some things he said that I really didn't like. And particularly, he's really into hunting and shooting and fishing. And I'm a vegetarian and I'm really anti-animal cruelty and hunting. So that was a bit hard to swallow. And in the 70s, when he was being hounded by his first wife's admirers and fans and blamed for her death, she committed suicide. He wrote a lot of letters about women libbers and, the libbers are out again. And I'm a feminist, so I'm reading this, you know, the libbers are after me. And it's a very, when I read the letters, I thought, he's a very masculine person who comes from a completely different mindset to me in a lot of different ways. And yet I'm trying to channel the beautiful words that he wrote. I'm identifying with them, not with the man. With the man, I'm not really identifying, but with the writing, I am. So they're two completely separate things. And it led me then to thinking about the modern artists who we don't do that with, though. So, I mean, Ted Hughes is long dead. He did suffer for many years. His career suffered for not being a popular person. And only just before he died, he wrote a series of poems about his first wife that restored his reputation and brought him back. But he was dying then. But he still, because he's a great artist, has survived that. But there are people in our modern culture. So I wrote a few down. Harvey Weinstein, the film producer, I think everyone would agree, has made some of the best films ever made. Kevin Spacey, the actor, amazing. Roseanne Barr, who I think had a very amazing TV show that was unique in its time, and she lost her job for things she said. So we're not forgiving culture. My question to you, Ellis, is culture forgiving only if you are so good that nobody can ignore you?
Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Right, so you're taking it on a step further then. I think you raise a really interesting point in today, in the sense that things are so open and news can move so fast that actually it can be quite difficult for people to be private, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. And a little bit of me does worry, and I'm not doing anything like forgiving Harvey Weinstein, obviously, but a bit of me worries that some really great art, movies, music, all sorts of things wouldn't exist. We wouldn't have the benefit of them if we expect everybody to be basically angels all the time, because people aren't. Like, people have failings, okay, and in that sense, let's not talk about that, but, you know, some of it can be on an epic scale, but we're not talking about people who are doing things illegal or immoral. We're talking about whether somebody is likable or not, right? Let's move away from...
Well, actually, no, I wasn't. I was talking about, yeah, I mean, whether they're...
Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, that's a different issue about whether or not just their persona, their attitude is something that is likable, isn't it?
Yeah, and the crimes they committed against people.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's a very different thing. They're with them, you're going into a totally different realm, which
I think that is the interesting part that, and we're probably having two different conversations because we think of this two different ways. What I find interesting is just what you just said. If Harvey Weinstein was alive 200 years ago, mm-hmm. we wouldn't, well, we're not losing his films, but we're losing all the films he would have made in the future, because we've agreed as a society that he's an unacceptable man now, and that's it. And so all those films won't get made. And there's so many people in history. Like, I was reading about Caravaggio. I knew nothing about. He murdered someone. He brawled. He was like unpleasant in the extreme. He threw things at people. He spent all his time out getting drunk. Even if he hadn't murdered someone, he sounds like a genuinely unpleasant man. And yeah. If the society of the day had said, you know, you're not putting on a very good presence on social media. You're not making yourself very likable. And actually, we don't want you. We don't want your paintings. You're right. We would have really suffered.
Yeah. And I think there is something a little bit where it always gets me. And believe me, you know, I'm not, you know, I get as frustrated as anybody else with politicians, but it surprises me always that politicians or people who are head of companies, going away from art now, but when they do something wrong or they make a mistake, everybody says resign, resign, and I'm like, no, stay in place and sort it out. You know, immediately there's this like, we're not accepting this, you've got to go. And I think it's fine to say we're not accepting this, sort it out. But sometimes I can't even remember who it was. There was somebody on the radio yesterday, football person, and he, you know, he made a whole load of statements, and they were about his use of language about racial situations. And he kind of said, I'm trying to keep up, but it changes, and it does change. And I don't think the answer is to educate and understand, but not say you've done something wrong, therefore you're out of your job. And somehow we have kind of got the lines a little bit blurred, I think, around that. But this doesn't answer the main question, which is, does it matter if you like the art? And I would say my response to art is primarily always a visual one. Like you see a painting and you have a reaction to it, and you like it or you don't like it. I've never liked a painting because I like the artist. It's never been that way round. I have liked a painting and then been interested to find out more about the artist. And it, when I find out more, sometimes I appreciate the painting more than I did on my initial reaction. And that can be more understanding there about their life or their attitude or where they are. It's not necessarily to do with liking them or disliking them as a person. It's more to do with understanding more, and then the painting kind of makes more sense, and then I like and appreciate the painting better. So I don't think it is to do with liking or not. It's for me, finding out more about the artist helps me understand the work a little bit more. And in the past, there have been, I was trying to think of a name and it's completely gone. There have been examples where I have appreciated and liked the work much more as a result of finding out about the person's life.
Now, I have another example where it did spoil it for me. And this is a musical artist, actually, not a visual artist, but Van Morrison. Brilliant musician, and we went to see him in New York years and years ago, and the concert was fantastic, really, really good. But he is a notorious rude man. He's just notoriously horrible. And on this night, he was angry with the drummer, and he just, after every song, he turned around and berated this guy. I mean, we couldn't hear the words, but we could see the gestures, and the guy was sinking further and further in his drum seat. And the whole audience was shifting uncomfortably. It was like really difficult to sit through. And I can't hear Van Morrison now without thinking, you're a dick. You just treated that guy really badly. And it must have been 20 amazing. Years ago.
But that's astonishing. And that, so that kind of brings us on, because that's very public.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, and what's interesting about that then is this whole thing about persona and visual impressions. I mean, I think we all want to present the best versions of ourselves to be made public. Nobody's going to put their hands up. I mean, like, you know, am I really going to take a selfie of what I look like when I get up first thing in the morning these days? No, I'm not going to. But, you know, I don't mind about whether my hair's done or not, but I don't want to see you when I'm you. I don't want you to see me when I'm on day five and my hair really needs a good wash. I'm not. There's no
Surely,
need.
Surely, Alice, in the morning, you are arranged on a white duvet in a flowing white nightdress with toast next to you and a nice cup of coffee. Just like we see on Instagram, people.
Yeah,
do.
That's what life is. That's what... Life is really not like that. But the point is that you don't necessarily need to see it in anybody else, do you? But does that mean that you are presenting a fake persona just because you don't share all of that? Or is that not what we look for?
Yeah, there's a... There's a fine line there, isn't there? Because you don't want to be inauthentic in the sense of doing something that's not really what you would do if you were not trying to impress someone. Mm-hmm. But like you say, you also don't want to go, blah, here's everything. Open up the robe. Years ago, funny story, I lived in a house above an old lady. And she would come downstairs to wave to me when I went to work in the morning, but she just wore a dressing gown not fastened up with nothing underneath. And so she would wave crazily and the robe would hang open. Anyway, she was lovely, but we don't want to do that, do we? but Pam's question also came out of this idea that she didn't want her persona to matter at all.
Yes.
She wanted to feel, to be completely private, which made me think of Banksy, but I don't think she meant that she wanted to sneak around in the dark of night in a hoodie painting walls, because he's managed to stay private.
Yeah, and there is somebody, I think I've mentioned before, there's somebody at one of the art fairs that I did, and it's private, and the YouTube video, they have a hood on, and whereas I think that kind of thing, that's much more of an artificial construct than just, I mean, that really is a created persona, even if it's an invisible persona, isn't it? But I think the question about how much, you know, can we stay private? What do we have to reveal? You know, it comes back to your work. And actually, you know, really, if your work is strong enough and is consistent enough and you're working enough, or that's all you're sharing, that can stand on its own. You know, you don't have to tell people what you've had for lunch and all of those kind of elements of your life. The story should be about the work. And I think we do have a little bit more of a pressure these days with social media, but the alternative is not having access to any of that and only having your work being shown if you get it through the gates of a gallery and acceptance by somebody else. And I would any day pick what we've got now than how it was 20 years ago, any day.
I was thinking, you know, one of the people I wrote down as an unlikable person we've discussed before is Sean Scully. And that's just my personal opinion. I know someone who knew him in the past and thinks he's very nice. So just my personal opinion.
So for anybody who doesn't know, he's a British artist. But and again, the unlikable element was to do with his, slightly grumpy, but also his familial responsibilities, shall we say.
Yeah. Yes. He wasn't the best husband, let's put it that way.
Or father.
Yeah, or father. But that brought me to this idea that the persona that he has, and this is the persona that Ted Hughes had, the persona that Tracy Emin has, is this persona of I am my art. Everything else is less important. I am here for my art. And in that sense, that's a specific persona that I actually don't think they put on or pretended.
No.
It's really how they are. But it's a very clear persona, which actually, I don't know if it makes you a better artist, it makes you a more hardworking artist. And probably helps to make you a more respected artist, do you think?
I think if you are very driven, and I think that there is a scale in this, and I was going to say we all get to choose. I'm not sure how much you do get to choose, in the sense that perhaps it's a bit like sexuality in that sense. It is what it is. You are what you are. You know, you're either ridiculously driven and your art is all consuming in your life, or it's part of your life that you enjoy and yet you don't want it to take over, or you're somewhere in between. You know, what I do think is interesting, and I did a little bit of research into, you know, is there, your question was, is there a correlation between art and a flawed personality? And certainly if you look back over many artists, there are enormous links between what we might consider to be not usual mood disorders, and in some senses much more significant than that. So, you know, everyone from Frida Kahlo, Monet, you know, who did amazing things but also struggled with certain stages of, you know, mental health. A lot of great art comes out of distress, comes out of war. Is it something you actively want to go out and seek? No, but I think it can be an incredible driver. And I think on a personal level, I would say that having something that pushes me, I mean, making art for me was definitely something that helped me both understand and come out of a period of depression. And it's something that helps me with the big questions of, you know, what am I looking for in life? What is mm-hmm. the meaning in life? What is relevant? And it's not, we've spoken about this before. For me, it's not political, but there is a questioning element for definites that comes out of making art. And I think perhaps you do have to be a little bit nutty in order to do that, because it is ultimately perhaps pointless.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's pointless. I think the opposite. I think that one of my worries is I sometimes look at someone like Tracy Emin and think, I should have done that. I should have just known when I was 18, and I should have dedicated all my time. And I know you said last week she regrets too much partying at certain stages, but she's always just been about that. And there's a part of me that thinks you can't be great if you're not that serious. I think
there's something in that.
Yeah, you can't get to that level unless you're totally driven and obsessed and work at it so hard.
But I also think it's okay if that's not what you want. And yes. I don't think it makes it less relevant what you're doing within your life at your level, whatever you're working at. You don't have to aspire to that in order for it to count.
No.
Definitely.
No. I agree with you.
I think in order to achieve something that is extreme or great, you have to push yourself to extreme or great levels. I mean, the same goes for, you know, sport or athletes or these nutty people who get on a boat all on their own and go around the world for a year. I mean, seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, most of us aren't gonna, you know, I mean, like, are you crazy? I have absolutely, but this is the thing, isn't it? Some people have that driven desire to do something like that on a real physical challenge, and art is different, and it's different for lots of people. Sometimes it's just calming and, you know, reassuring and a hobby and easy and something that you just, you know, want to do to create something beautiful, and that completely has its place as well.
You know what this brings up for me, though, is the men versus women thing in art history. So we always say there's so many more famous male artists than female artists. And part of that is always attributed to the sexism in the art world, which is, you know, especially a long time ago, definitely for real. But there's also this other part of it, which is the ability that society has given men to throw themselves into their art, because over the years, women have done the housekeeping and the child rearing and everything else and had to fit their art in between that. And it's still like that today to a large extent. So that flawed personality, we're calling it, of being so driven. The only reason Tracy Emin has been able to do that is she didn't get married and she doesn't have children. And she always says that if she'd have had children, she doesn't think she would have achieved what she's achieved, because she would have loved them and wanted to put energy and time into them.
Although I do wonder if a little bit of that is an opt-out. And
well, not for me, because I don't have any. So well, I don't have any excuse. But
exactly.
But
in terms of how we do things with children and husbands, I think there is a difference between the way women approach things and the way men approach things, in that very often men have a kind of
single-minded,
yeah. And you know, it's even been obvious in the times that we've been at home and we're both working, my husband and I mean, he does things, but he is also very single-minded, and there are things that happen domestically that he doesn't notice, isn't aware of, doesn't pay any attention to, and I do notice and pay attention to and feel that I have to do something about. And sometimes it works the other way around. So it's not totally one way, but I think,
but it has been in the past, though. I'm not saying about today. It has been. If you were a woman in Van Gogh's time, you were not able to go, you know what, I am dedicating my life to making my art, and you, husband, you're going to have to look after kids and clean the house. that couldn't happen, but it could happen the other way around. That's all I'm saying, that single-mindedness was available to men, has been available to men for a lot longer than it's been available to women. But perhaps you're right that women could never be that single-minded anyway.
Yeah, although I don't think being an artist was ever an easy path for anybody. So I think the men who committed to it had had a degree of...
Definitely, but they didn't always also have to go pick up the kids and clean the house. And that's all I'm saying. There is a difference there, and less of a difference today, but still not completely. Because like you say, there are things that happen that your husband doesn't know about that you do. Now, it might be, though, what I'm saying is that...
I could choose not to do them, though.
Yes, it might be that the house wouldn't fall apart if you didn't do them. But my point is that men often choose not to do them. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they might not be wrong to make that choice. They might be right. But I just think it's interesting that it's part of why we're not so represented in our history is the dual responsibilities that we've had over time.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
So, but you had written down here under the correlation between great art and flawed personality, some kind of characteristics that you feel are related to the persona of an artist. I'm assuming that's what they are.
Yeah. So these, and I think these are all different elements that we bring to our art and could be considered. I mean, it's a great thing, isn't it? Like when you go to interviews, you remember that when you went for job interviews and they always used to say, there always used to be a question, wasn't there, that was wrapped up about what do you find difficult? And you were supposed to use an element of your personality, but portray it. So, well, I can be quite stubborn, but actually what I find is that really allows me to get projects completed on time. And there's a little bit like that, you know, when we're talking about personality in art, I think, we can be critical of ourselves in art, and you know that could be something that is viewed both as a positive and as a negative thing. We tend to be a little bit dreamers, and I think you have to have that. You have to have that sense of aspiring to something that's a little bit bigger than yourself, perhaps, because we're always stretching into a space where there isn't a clear answer. There isn't a ready-made solution for it. You're always testing the waters. I don't know. I mean, all of these things, perhaps, if you push them too far, being driven, looking for meaning, needing your own space. We've talked about this before, you know, is it selfish? I don't think that makes it a flawed personality. I think that makes you human. But if you take anything to extremes, it gets more difficult for people around you.
Yeah.
But I think what we're talking about here is how much of that serves to help you in the creation of your art, and how much do other people need to know about it? I mean, here we are sitting on a podcast every week. How is it going for you? I mean, people have said to me, I can't believe that you're talking so honestly about whatever you talk about. And we have these little notes, but we don't really plan it. We show up and do it.
Yeah.
It kind of is what it is. And sometimes it's rubbish, and sometimes it's quite interesting. And, you know, that's all we can do, I think.
Yeah.
But do we do it more than most? Do you actually think that we do it more than most? Expose what our personalities. I mean, in a way we don't, you know. There are many things about you that are private that we don't know, and there are many things about me that people don't know. I don't show everything, yeah, even doing this.
Should we do an episode where we do all the private things you don't know about us? That'd get the most downloads ever.
Well, it's funny, I put a post yesterday telling a little, you know, funny story about and why was it relevant? Oh, because we were talking about taking photographs, about, you know, being part of a Hovis bread advert when I was 10 or 11.
Yes, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, does anybody need to know that? It's not relevant. It seemed to be a little bit funny. It cheered me up. I thought, you know, why not share that? But I don't feel like I'm exposing my soul by telling people that.
No. On the podcast, I do think we reveal more than most people I know do, only because, like you, I get a lot of messages saying thank you for being so honest and saying, so I assume people, you know, think we're more honest than most people. But I don't think that, I think that's helpful in the sense of building trust with people. And particularly, you know, like your membership site and my course, I think that's helpful for that. I don't think it makes any difference, like you said at the beginning, when we sell in our paintings.
No.
But I do think what matters about our personas online is this thing, going back to Sean Scully, of seeming serious about it. And we've talked about this before, but I think you have to seem committed, dedicated, serious about what you're doing, passionate about it. That makes a difference. So it's not about, for Pam, it's not about, like you said, what she had for lunch or where she lives or who she's married to. It's about how she works and what she's interested in, and showing up regularly so people know that she's serious about it. And if they buy a painting today, you know, it might be worth something tomorrow, or they might be able to come back and buy another one in a year to go with it, that kind of thing.
So that's more then about attitude and commitment than it is about personality, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't think, just going back to the paintings, I don't think people buy my paintings because they like me, or does it work the other way around? Would you not buy a painting because you disliked the person if you knew more about them, possibly?
I'm just thinking, say I came to your open studios and I was quite interested in a painting, and I've been in this situation where you're not 100% sure, but you're like, I might buy that. I really might buy that. And then if you came over and you were rude, or if I asked you a question and you were dismissive, then I wouldn't buy it, would I?
No.
I would think no, actually. No. But if I fell in love with it, if I walked in and I was like, I have to have that, I probably wouldn't even get to talk to you anyway. I'd just go, I want that. So I suppose it's the degrees. If you really loved a painting, you'd overlook the fact that the painter was rude to you. But mostly we're a bit uncertain when we're buying art, aren't we? So it does matter in that.
So what are we just saying then here? If we just come up with a great earth-shattering truth, basically just don't be rude to people.
Yeah. Just don't be a dick.
Is that... As long as you don't go to extremes, then it's okay. I think it is difficult, and I understand.
And be serious. I'm saying don't be a dick and be. I don't think that you can completely hide either.
No.
If you want to, as implied with the question, Pam even asking the question implies that she wants to sell paintings. If you don't want to sell paintings, of course, none of this matters, but it implies that she does. So I don't think you can hide. But if you're pleasant and professional with everybody and you look consistent with what you're doing, I don't think they have to love you personally or agree with your politics or like the way you treat your dog, or they don't have to know any of that.
No.
Mind you, if you treat your dog badly, I'd never buy a painting from you. Just saying.
But I think it is difficult, and I think it's something that certainly I know that people find difficult. And it's not so much to do with exposing your personality as much as just this thing about showing up and being public and being visible with your work. And unless somebody else is going to do that for you, you have to do it yourself. So unless you're going to go totally down the gallery route, nobody else is going to do that for you. So to a degree, you do have to show up and find a way to make your work visible, share it often and talk about it, which isn't revealing more of yourself than you feel comfortable with. And I would say that, you know, that has grown. I mean, I had a slight baptism of fire with live video by using Periscope in the days of Periscope, which could be pretty brutal. And after that, you know, anything felt okay. But it does get easier. And I think it's one of those things that actually, if it feels really uncomfortable for you, then it's time to do a little bit of thinking, of just, you know, just double check, why is this so difficult for me, and work on that rather than just avoiding it.
The one other thing that's just struck me as well that we haven't covered is the fact that it might be that the persona is everything. And so Tracy Emin is an example of that, right? Her work is about her life. So if she doesn't reveal everything, then it doesn't work. So let's say I had an email from somebody, poor lady, I felt sorry for her because she mistook me for somebody else. And she wrote telling me how much she loved one of my paintings, except it wasn't my painting. And she felt terrible, but I wasn't at all bothered. I just wish I'd known whose painting it was so I could point her to it. But she connected with the painting because the artist had talked about the inspiration for the painting, and that was highly personal to her.
Yeah.
And she wanted to own it for that reason, or I think she did. And that, so if the reason for your work is something emotionally resonant with other people and personal to you, and that's the whole center of it, then it's different, isn't it? Then you probably
it is, but
do.
Then I don't think you have that this hurdle to get over. Then it's not something that you worry about, because you've already, it's almost like you've already made your peace with that as part of you and what you're doing, so you're okay with it. I think the issue comes with this worry about it. And actually, do you remember there's a section in Connected Artists, we were talking about this with somebody. I think we were talking about the physical logistics of live streaming, and there were a couple of questions, and I realized that this was more of a worry for people than I had perhaps appreciated. And so we did a whole section. Do you remember the visibility challenge, time to shine thing? And it's a whole different sequence of, I think it's 3 weeks of like just mini things each day that take you through. And some of it is journaling exercises, and some of it is understanding, and some of it is just physical things. Because I just believe that it is really important to get you through that and over that hurdle of how you share and understand what the right place is for you to do it. That was a good thing. I think people found that was very helpful.
Yeah.
To do that.
And everybody who's done that kind of thing in your group, where you've encouraged people to do it, you see people more and more coming out of their shell and doing it. It's just like anything. It's scary at first. Yes. The more you do it, the better you feel. But when you do a live stream, it doesn't have to be, right, let me tell you my marital problems, and then let me tell you about my son who's really annoying me. Instead, it can be like, let me tell you about this painting and why I made it and what it's about. And that is what's exciting and interesting to people. No one wants to hear us whine about what's wrong with our lives anyway.
And I think that what's fundamentally exciting about all of this is it's not even just about how it helps your art or how it gets your art out there. All of this, and it doesn't go away. I have to say this as well. It doesn't go away. There are always next levels, next limits, and things that you're looking at and change. But that's the exciting part. It's like when you do this with your work, in your work, for your work, it also happens like in your life, like you start to make perhaps braver decisions about other things that are happening in your life or handle situations differently. And I think that's where the real essence of it is. And the two things can feed into each other and be really, really helpful. You know, if you're trying to hide your persona in your art and the way you talk about it, where else is happening that might be holding you back in life? And that's the kind of thing where, it's not easy, but it's worth doing the work on wherever you need to get that kind of support or help to do that. But in terms of persona, nobody has to present a perfect public face because nobody's interested in that anyway. But let's perhaps not go quite down the full-on extremes that some crazy, wacky artists of history have gone.
Don't be Caravaggio, people. Don't throw artichokes. And if you don't know what I mean, just Google Caravaggio and artichokes. So moving on, what's been inspirational to you this week, Alice?
Well, I think you should go first with yours because mine is kind of relevant. So you tell me yours first.
I don't have too much to say about mine other than it's a documentary and unfortunately it's on the BBC, so this won't be available to people listening outside the UK, but it's on BBC iPlayer if you can get iPlayer, and it's about Maggie Hambling, the painter, sculptor, all-round amazing female artist, British legend, who's actually just come up in the news in the last few days for a statue that she made.
Yes,
but the documentary is not about the statue. The documentary is following her as she approaches a canvas. And it's she's had this canvas in a studio. It used to be a self-portrait. She's painted over it. And then she's painted over it in all black paint. And now she's trying to think about what to do. And in the process of thinking about what to do, she's talking about her life and her attitudes to things. She's constantly got a whiskey and a cigarette in her hand. And she's a real character, as anybody who knows her knows. But the documentary is just really fascinating. And I won't spoiler alert by telling you what happens to the black painting. But it's really interesting. And my mum, who doesn't know anything about art, really, she's been on her own at home for a few days because her partner's in the hospital having an operation. And I told her, why don't you watch this? Because she didn't know what to watch. And she said, oh, I don't know anything about her. Anyway, she sent me an email the next day saying, that was so fascinating. I loved it. So it's just a really good character study, I think. So if you can
watch it. I was going to say, talk about persona.
Yeah. She's got a persona.
She's got a persona. But also, how old is she now? Or do you want to guess?
I don't know. I'm
late 70s.
I was guess by looking at her, even 80, but she's had a lot of alcohol and cigarettes, so I don't know. Let me look her up. she was born in 19, she's 75. Oh, good grief. She looks so much older than my mum, and my mum's 78.
She does. She's not going to get an advert for L'Oreal face cream.
No, sure. She's lived a life. She's got a face that says, I have lived a life. But she's just such an admirable person. Even right at the beginning of the show, the interviewer asks her a question and you can see that it's annoying her as he asks the question. He hasn't even got through it and she's annoyed and she starts to look annoyed and then she snaps at him and then she turns around and walks away, but she winks at the camera just like,
yes.
I'm just being me.
She's, I think, the persona of the kind of slightly stroppy lady of British art is something that she actually quite enjoys.
Yeah, but she is a person who just works. She gets up, she works all day. You know, that's what she's, that's
her. Does she have somebody to, there you go, you see, she probably has somebody to make her sandwiches and look after her, doesn't she?
She has a partner who was on the show. I didn't realise that. She has a partner.
Who's also an artist.
Yeah, and she seemed to have an assistant. Yeah, there seemed to be some other people around.
I'm sure there. I mean, this is the thing. Everybody needs somebody to support them. I remember reading the Kurt Jackson book and he would go around and do all these lovely in situ landscape drawings and paintings. But he always had his wife there who he literally said in the book, makes my lunch and carries my stuff for me. And I'm like, well, that's nice.
Very nice. I've not got Phil to do that.
No.
Anyway, what about you?
Well, so mine is following on from that, interestingly. So we have just unveiled a statue that is for Mary Wollstonecraft. Now, she was one of the forerunners of women's rights, and she wrote a book in 1792 called A Vindication of the Rights of Women. At one point she tried to kill herself. She threw herself off a bridge, but she was rescued and then she married and she died pretty young, age 38, after giving birth to a daughter who was called Mary, who grew up to be Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein. But she is sort of renowned as the, if you look, well before the suffragettes, person who first started talking about women's rights. So Maggie Hamling has just unveiled a statue which is for her. It's not supposed to be of her, it's for her. I mean, it has been reviled in the press. Yeah. Nobody likes it. They've called it, so there's a kind of a silver shape and there's this figure of a woman coming out of it that is quite small and is naked and has a lot of pubic hair. It's not supposed to be a portrait of her, it's supposed to be every woman, but everyone's saying, how come here is this complete women's rights activist and, you know,
she's,
what have we got? We've
naked.
Basically got tiny silver Barbie. So interestingly, I mean, I would love to hear, I can imagine, I don't know, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I'd love to hear what Maggie Hambling's reaction is to the reaction to her statue. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say what inspired me was this quote, which is from the book, which is, "I do not wish them, women, to have power over men, but over themselves." That is something that I wish everybody had. And just this ability to make decisions, live by your decisions, honor your decisions, and be honest with them. And one of the big things for me was, again, sometimes we aspire to do great things, and sometimes we aspire to sit on the sofa in our pajamas and watch Netflix. And both of those are absolutely fine, and they can exist simultaneously as long as you are honest about what you are doing and why. And the difficulty for me comes when I want to do great things, but I'm on the sofa watching Netflix. That's where life gets tricky. If you're on the sofa having a chill day because that's what you want to do today, love it, accept it, bring it in, have power over yourself and your own decision, and just be clear about what you're doing that helps you. So that was quite nice. I just like that little quote. It's nothing to do with men at all, really. It's, yeah. I don't really care if you're a man or a woman. Just, you know, have power over yourself and your own decision. And that's what I think is really important.
But when you read that quote, I thought, I get that statue now. Like, that statue, I get, I don't like it particularly, but I get it's meant to be like
the rising up.
This is me and I have nothing to do. I'm doing the statue for anybody who can't see because she's got her arms wide open. we should say to all our listeners, if any of you are sculptors, and if any of us decide to be sculptors and you're asked to make a statue of anybody famous anywhere, don't. Because in my experience, it's never well received.
Yeah, nobody likes them.
The only one I know that people love is Eric Morecambe on Morecambe Beach. There's a statue of Eric Morecambe and it's really nice and funny and everyone has their photos taken with it. But it's not a great work of art. But at least looks like the person and it. But usually they're just reviled and hated. So I would always stay away from that. She's brave, Maggie, for even taking it on.
Well, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? You know, a commission. And I can imagine that she was, I mean, I just always want to see, okay, so that's the statue that she ended up with. What I want to see is all the ideas, all the workings towards that. How did it get to that stage? Were there other ideas that got discarded?
That
kind of behind the scenes stuff I'd love to see. Like, and a little bit of me does think, is that really the best? Should I not say that?
Don't say that because she might listen and you do not want to mess with Maggie.
I was thinking I might be brave like you've been, but and get in touch with her. But I don't think I will now after the statue.
Oh, no, you must.
No, because I don't like the statue.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Oh,
she's brave enough to stand up for herself. I think that just about does it for us this week. Now, if Alice has got her act together, by the time you listen to this, if you listen to it in real time, you will actually be able to join her Connected Artists group, which I'm a member of. So she's laughing because I actually said that. So go over to her website, pop over to Alice's website, and you can find a link for Connected Artists there. It's open for a limited time only. And that sounded a bit cheesy, but it is actually open for a limited time only. And I can highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's not for what I would say is it's not for everybody. We did a really interesting member survey this week, which I'm still going through the responses of for as we kind of plan for what we're going to cover next year. And there are some really good summaries and recommendations in there from people who have kind of, who are in there, who experience it, who know what it's about, who are happy to kind of share what it is and who it's for. So hopefully, as Louise says, by the time this goes out, that will be organised so that there will be information for you so you can decide if it's the right thing for you or not.
See you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye. Particularly male artists, presumably.
Yeah, actually most of them were.
Yeah, if you change your phrasing on your Google search, you might find something different.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody will want to put that word in, that's why.
No, it's not appropriate.
hello, Paulie, Izzy. Is it Izzy?
Indy.
Indy.
Yeah,
Izzy's my friend's dog. Indy, poor Indy. Oh.
Not very happy.
Oh.